Shabbat Shalom again. Shabbat Shalom. For those who will hear this later, we will, the first Shabbat of every month, we will be having either a live service or almost live service with our brethren around the world. So we'll have the blessing from over here at the new campus that we have to be able to share that with our brethren. But of course, this message is not going out that way. But I am taping it on the voice recorder. We'll probably put it online. We gave it at the feast. We have it on video, so we're not videotaping today. But a couple of people had asked who didn't get a chance to hear it, and it is a very important message on raising our children, so it's probably good to give again. And it's called the Elijah message. The Elijah message. And I was mentioning that being in Israel for 11 years, you know, we've met not only the two witnesses, but we call them the 2,000 witnesses. We've met many people claiming to be the two witnesses and dressed in everything, you know, from bathrobes to sackcloths and, you know, a few other exotic clothing that I will not even mention. But it's really interesting when you meet these people and the things they're doing. And, you know, one man, he had a little box that said, "Jesus is Lord," and going around and screaming at people, you know, and telling them all that they're going to hell. And you see this husband and wife and their little baby eating breakfast, and he's holding on to his child, "Just let me eat my breakfast," you know. But they claim, they think that's the Elijah message. You know, one time there were actually two prophets, both thinking they were Elijah the prophet, and they met each other in the street in Jerusalem. And they're kind of looking at each other, and one's got a shirt on that says Elijah, and the other one's got his bag. "No, I'm Elijah, I'm Elijah, I'm Elijah," and they're screaming at each other. So if it wasn't so serious, it actually would be pretty funny. But I was thinking about it because in the scripture, when we see about Elijah the prophet, and I will read the scripture in Malachi 4. Malachi 4, 4 and 5 says, "Remember the Torah of my servant Moses, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, the statutes and judgments. Behold, I am sending you Eliyahu the prophet before the coming and great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the sons, and the heart of the sons to their fathers, that I not come and strike the earth with utter destruction." So when we see about this end time Elijah, this Eliyahu that's coming in the end time, I don't really see it like maybe some of these Christian movies portray it, the way people think it. I don't see some long-haired white guy with one tooth screaming and yelling at people that they're all going to hell. You know, I just don't see that from Scripture. I see somebody from Scripture who's turning the hearts of the fathers to the sons and the hearts of the sons to the father. And I think that when you're talking about the Elijah message or the Elijah ministry, more than just speaking about prophecy and all this kind of stuff, we need to talk about bringing structure back into the family situation, you know. And if ever in the world today we needed to start doing more lessons, doing more studies, doing more discussion on child rearing, it's now. And the main reason why there's so much chaos in the world today, and I'll read this article in a few minutes about what's happening with many of our teens in society today, we're losing them, is really because I say the men have abdicated their throne. You know, and you talk in veritably all the time when you talk to the men, you'll hear a lot about Jezebel. They'll talk about Jezebel, the Jezebel spirit. But like I always say, wherever there's a Jezebel, there's got to be an Ahab. And again, if there's a Jezebel in your house, in your congregation, in your community, you know, in your town, then what that means is that there's an Ahab, you know, that a woman could not grab a throne unless the man abdicated it. So, of course, in this message, I'm going to talk about general child rearing in general, but I'm really giving a message like this to more of the fathers, you know, that if the fathers want to redeem their children, you know, they have to spend time with their children, and there's biblical commands that says here to do, to turn their hearts of the fathers back to the children. It's really interesting if you look at the Elijah from the Bible, you know, in that situation when it happened, because we have the reference there that it actually uses those words in 1 Kings 18 and 17 when Eliyahu is fighting the priest of Baal. And here you see that these people have all went to pagan worship, you know, and they're following these false deities. And what happens? You know, Eliyahu stands strong. He takes the position that was given to him by Yahweh. He's over there, you know, fighting 450 priests of Baal by himself. He's taunting them. You know, I mean, it's like, it's one, talk about a hero. Talk about somebody that you're like, wow, I would like to be like him. And again, Eliyahu, the greatest prophet of Israel, you know, in the Bible with the things that he did. And then all of a sudden, what happens? You know, the priests of Baal, they're cutting themselves. They're screaming, you know. He's taunting them. Nothing's happening. And then he gets his turn. And he puts the water, you know, around the altar. And he cries out to Yahweh. And fire comes down and burns the altar. And then he gives the command, don't let any of them leave. And they kill the 450 priests of Baal. And it's like, and what are the people saying? Yahweh is Elohim. Yahweh is Elohim. And he won the battle. I mean, he had them there. Now all he had to do was teach them the Torah. He turned their hearts. He literally turned their hearts. But what happened? The very next day, Jezebel finds out about this and says, you know, mark my words, you will not live through tonight. And Eliyahu's running to Mount Horeb. You know, so I'm just amazed at that story, that this man of faith, this man of power, this man of zealousness, that could fight 450 priests of Baal by himself, would then run away because of a woman. You know, he feared a woman. I think this is the crux of the Elijah message. You know, that men are not fulfilling the Elohim given role that he's given to them. And again, there's nobody to blame but ourselves, because again, if we as men are not fulfilling the position that the Father has given us, then we need to look inside and look at ourselves. And the outcome of this, the outcome of fathers not turning the hearts of their children back to Yahweh, is what? Children are more evil now than they've ever been in the history of man. And maybe this is the time I'll read this article, a little bit from it. And this is an article that says, for some Americans, every day is Halloween. And it's talking about some of the, it's a book by a man called David Kupalian. He's the author of a book called The Marketing of Evil. And he's going into some of the things that are happening in our society today. And he says, basically, there's no boundaries or taboos anymore, you know, when it comes to the younger people and all the different escapades that are going on, from homosexuals to bisexuals, transsexuals, polysexuals, and many other things that you don't even want to know about. He talks about something that the youth are doing today called bug chasing, where literally people will go out and try to get infected with AIDS. That's their purpose, to try to go out and get infected with AIDS. So it's showing you, one of the things as you see this is that human life in general has been so degraded, so lowered in our society to our youth. You know, suicide is among the highest that it's ever been in the history of man, percentage-wise. And just the value of life is really degraded to nothing. You know, America alone, we kill, murder 2 million babies a year legally. They call it abortion, but it's murder in the eyes of Yahweh. And it's basically for convenience sake. And we're just living in a world where life in general is just not valued anymore. You know, you're talking under Obamacare, euthanasia of older people. You know, you're going to have 50 million more people on health care, and there's not enough medicine and care to go around. So the government will decide who will get the care and who won't. And basically, you're going to have almost what you had in World War II. You know, when you had the Nazi youth, the Hitler youth. You know, survival of the fittest. And this is the kind of society that we're breeding through this kind of things. Body piercing has progressed from traditional earrings for females to earrings for males to multiple piercings for both male and female, to literally every part of the body, the tongue, the nose, the eyebrow, the lip, the cheek, the navel, the breast, the genitals, and again, things you don't really want to know. There's also a national epidemic on self-mutilation. Part of the story I just mentioned in the book of Kings, when it talks about Eliyahu, the people, the priests of Baal, were cutting themselves. It's a demonic thing that is done in cultic worship. And you're seeing it with a lot of youth today. They're doing the same thing. Body mutilation, cuttings to the skin, to the arms, and that kind of thing. Cutting their own bodies with razors and knives to obtain relief from emotional conflict. Cutting themselves to bleed to retain a relief from emotional conflict. Tattooing and piercing are just the tip of the body modification iceberg. Ritual scarification and 3D art implants are big. And now they have genital beading, stretching and cutting, transdermal implants, scrotal implants, tooth art, and facial sculpture. How about hanging your skin by hooks? It's called suspension. Something else the youth are doing today. In literally any other context, this would be gruesome torture. But to many people who frequent suspension parties, it's a spiritual experience. Tongue splitting is also considered by some to be a positive spiritual experience. When you dramatically alter its structure and free yourself of the physical boundaries your biology imposes, in some people it triggers a larger freeing on a spiritual level. So why are so many teens in love with the forbidden and the bizarre? And he gets into this in this book. Why is American culture becoming more and more bizarre so that every day seems like real-life Halloween? And he says that America and the West is becoming increasingly a culture in love with death. The youth is in love with death, with all the different things they're doing. And he says, highly skilled marketers playing on our deeply felt national values of fairness, generosity, and tolerance have persuaded us to embrace as enlightened and noble that which all previous generations since America's founding regarded as grossly self-destruction. In a word, evil. So we see this, even what we were talking about in the class the last 2 weeks, on neural associative conditioning, that the society is literally conditioning these children toward this evil. That it's not evil, that it's good, that it's spiritual, and all kinds of things. So if ever there was a time where we needed the Elijah message, you know, this is it more than ever. The father must take over his Elohim-given role as the head of the family. You know, fathers must start acting like fathers. Ephesians 5 and verse 22. Ephesians 5:22 says, wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as to our master, because a husband is the head of the wife, is also Messiah, is the head of the congregation, and he is the savior of the body. But even as the congregation is subject to Messiah, so also the wife to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Messiah also loved the congregation and gave himself on its behalf. And again, by husbands taking their Elohim-given role as the leader of the family, it's not about a macho trip. It's not about forcing your will. It's not about having a controlling spirit. It's not about, you know, browbeating your children into obedience. It's nothing like that. It's about loving your family the way Messiah loves the congregation. And most of the time, the reason why the men have not been fulfilling their role is simply we're too selfish. You know, in the world we live in, we have all kinds of things. We work 10, 12 hours a day. People play golf. They are on the internet. They're doing all these things. And the bottom line is that we're just in a very, very selfish age. So again, when you're, you know, human nature right off the bat, here's about a man taking his Elohim-given role. You know, it's not about clubbing your wife over the head, like on the Flintstones, and, you know, dragging her out by the hair. We're talking about loving your family the way Messiah loves the congregation, you know, as men. Are we doing that? Do we look at our wives and our children the way Yeshua looks at the congregation? Do we love them that much? You know, when it comes to things I say, I can give a great example. You know, a man winds up getting a promotion at his work. And they've been living in the same area, say, his whole life. Very close with his family. Actually, maybe the wife and the husband both come from there. The in-laws are really good. Their children are growing up. Some of them are teenagers. They have their grandparents there. They have their cousins there. They're very happy where they live. And yet the man has the opportunity to get a job that he always wanted his whole life. It'll mean double the pay, the family could live better, and he can get out from a job he really didn't care for much and really do something that he always wanted to do. But on the other end, the children would have to leave their friends, they'd have to leave their schooling, they'd have to leave their grandparents. So now, even though in the end, you know, that the man has the authority from Yahweh to make the final decision, which should always be made equally with a husband and a wife, when The Bible gives the man the final decision. What that means is the man is ultimately responsible to Yahweh for that decision. It doesn't mean that everything is done according to the man. You know, me and my wife, with every decision we make, we do it together. You know, we both equally share our opinions. And then we make a decision together. And both me and my wife understand, though, that to Yahweh, whatever decision's made in the end, he's going to come to me. He's not going to come to my wife. So that's where the man having the authority, it's really the man has the responsibility more than authority. You know, that in the end, he's going to be responsible. But in this given situation, a real man who loves his family, even though this is the ideal thing he's waited for 20 years, if he knew it would adversely affect his wife and his children, would never take that job. And yet today, every day of the week, it happens. You know, why? Why does someone have to be transferred from New Jersey to California? You're going to tell me there's nobody in California that can't do the job that he's doing there? This is something that is started in the 1960s through the globalization and the New World Order. They purposely worked on breaking down the family, knowing once the family was broken down, total control of society is very easy from there. And they literally, you know, I read this from historians, Ralph Epperson, who is a very, very good historian on the globalization movement. He documents from these meetings, in the minutes from the meetings, that this is not something that happened by coincidence. That from the 1960s, that America started, corporate America started working on breaking up families, having children grow up without grandparents, without cousins, you know, without stability of being in an area for long. And again, how did it happen? Because of the vanity of the men. You know, the vanity of the men, that they saw the money, they saw the prestige, they saw whatever. But again, if we're loving our family like Messiah loves the congregation, then that should be our first instinct. Our first instinct should be, when we make any decision, what is best for my wife and my children? You know, what is best for them, not what is best for me, or what is going to be the thing that helps me the most. So what happens when the man abdicates his position? What happens when a father is not fulfilling the role as the leader of the family? Isaiah 3:12. It says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. Oh, my people, those leading you cause you to go astray, and they swallow the way of your paths." And when a man is not fulfilling his Elohim-given role as a leader, and like we said, you know, we've been saying it for 2 weeks, leadership is not sitting in the front telling everyone what to do. Leadership is using your Elohim-given gifts through the Spirit, you know, to the best of your ability in the body of Messiah. That's what leadership is. Every single person who has the Spirit of Yahweh is a leader. We all have different gifts, we all have different jobs, but we're all leaders. That means we all want to use the gifts that he's given us through his Spirit to the betterment of our families and the body of Messiah. So again, why are children the oppressors and women ruling over them? Because there's a vacuum. When the men are not fulfilling their Elohim-given positions, there's going to be a vacuum. And when that vacuum comes, this is the result, and then there's chaos. And a lot of times the men want to start blaming the women or start blaming their children, when really we need to look inside and blame ourselves. Because again, if you're the leader of the family and there's chaos in your family, there's nowhere to turn to but you. You look in even Israel, you know, when you had a King David or a righteous king, the whole nation was good. When you had an evil king like in Manasseh, forget about it. You had every chaos going on. So again, if there is a vacuum in leadership, you're going to have the result that we're seeing here. You also get verse 5, if you go back a couple of verses. It says, "And the people shall be crushed, man against man," Isaiah 3:5, "and a man on his neighbor. The boy will be insolent against the elder, and the despised against the honorable." So again, if you do not have a strong father figure in the family, your children are going to grow up, and they're going to be insolent against authority. They're going to be insolent against older people, and you're going to have a spirit of rebellion that grows up, you know. And again, there's a reason why Yahweh has a mother and a father, because the mothers are nurturers. The mothers in a child needs, they need that love, and they need the nurturing of the mother. And then they also need that stability of a father, the role model that he gives, you know, the instruction. And it's important for both of them in a family structure. If one is missing on either way, you're going to have bad results with your children. But again, we know from the end time, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 2, "For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, braggarts, arrogant, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, wicked." So again, like in the class we said the other day, every one of us is a second generation believer. We didn't grow up with the liberty of knowing these things from birth. So we all have been instilled in our belief system with things that are not of Yahweh and different beliefs that we got from our parents, our grandparents, or wherever else we picked them up. And we have to fight this tendency in the end time of the way the world is. You know, because automatically, like I say, your human nature you don't have to work on. The spirit of Yahweh you have to work on. Your human nature will come automatically. Just wake up in the morning. And we are lovers of ourselves, lovers of money, braggarts, arrogant, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, wicked. So if you do nothing, this will be the result. You have to put on the spirit of Yahweh every day, and you have to fight these tendencies. And if we don't, then we're going to see that's going to be the result of it. Another problem that happens sometimes is that, unfortunately, because like we were saying in our class the other day, like people like things, and our children, because they're an extension of us, that of course we love our children, that's a good thing, nothing wrong with it, but we want to make sure that our children do not become Elohim to us, you know, where we're blinded to our children's faults, that we can't take any advice, that, you know, it's just to a point where we only see the good in our children, not because they're good, but because they're an extension of us. And that's like it says, we love ourselves too much. You know, I said this the other day in the class, there's no such thing as low self-esteem. You know, Ephesians 5, no man has ever hated his own flesh. You know, and the problem isn't that we don't love ourselves enough. The problem is we love ourselves too much. You know, even people who supposedly try to commit suicide, you know, at least 90% don't do it. So there's no such thing as trying to commit suicide. You either do it or you don't. And since 90% don't succeed, it's telling you they're reaching out for something. Nobody wants to die. You know, we love our flesh too much. And we want to make sure that when we're raising our children, you know, that we're realizing this, that correction, you know, is a part of bringing them up to be the kind of people we want them to be. And we don't want to make our children into Elohim to us. Are your children being trained to respect elders? Do they say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am? You know, when someone older, and when I say elder here, I'm not just talking about an ordained person. I'm talking about older people in general, older people in the congregation. Are we training our children to respect the older people, to say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir? Do they wait for adults to go first if they're feeding or whatever? What is the answer? What is the answer? Are we raising our children? Are we raising them with manners? Are we raising them to be respectful? Are we raising them to be the kind of children that Yahweh would want them to be? And again, I have 2 points here I'm going to go over. The first one is the father must be around to spend time with the children. Extremely important. You know, we're living in a world where, at least in the West, it's very money-based, and many fathers will exchange buying their kids all kinds of things, from even when they're teenagers to big cars and expensive gifts and toys and all kinds of things, because they don't have the time to spend with them. And they're thinking the money is some kind of exchange for that time. And again, when your child is little, they don't know the difference if something is a $500 toy or blocks that you cut in the back with a handsaw. You know, at a young age, they don't know the difference. But what your child wants more than anything is simply your time. That's what they want. Any child who loves their parents, they want the time. They want to be with you. And there's nothing you can exchange for that. Proverbs 3 and verse 12. It says, "For whom Yahweh loves, he corrects, even as a father corrects the son with whom he is pleased." For whom Yahweh loves, he corrects, even as a father corrects the son with whom he is pleased. So again, it talks about this is time that you're spending with your children. You know, when you look at Deuteronomy 6, what does it say? You're to teach your children when you wake up. You're to teach them on the road. You're to teach them on the wayside. You're to teach them when they go to bed. What does this mean? It means you're with your children. And the problem is our society is very different today. In olden days, if we were living 2,000 years ago, what would happen? Number one, we wouldn't be spending 80% of our time indoors, you know, on some type of machinery. We would be basically waking up at 4 or 5 in the morning at the crack of dawn. The women would be going out and they would start grinding their meal, going to the well to get their water, taking their daughters with them, you know, teaching them. The men would be walking through their fields, starting to either harvest their barley or their wheat, or maybe their fall fruits or whatever it is, and they'd be teaching their child all about the Torah as they're going all day long. We don't live in that kind of world anymore. And unfortunately, because of it, because our world is 100% unnormal from the way Yahweh created it, you know, we have to take more drastic measures in this life. And I say to you, I'm telling you, there's nothing that you can exchange for your children. So never think that, you know, whether it's a job you're doing or being away or no matter how much money it can do, there's nothing you can exchange for your children. And that has to be your focus from the minute they're born till the minute you die. You know, my responsibility is to Mariah, if we ever had any other children, it would be to them also. But that's got to be my focus in life first, because what would be the good of helping all these other people to salvation if my own child fell away because I didn't give him the time? So it's important that we understand that as fathers. We have to set the tone. We have to set the tone. Proverbs 29:15. Proverbs 29:15 said, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a boy let loose causes shame to his mother. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a boy let loose causes shame to his mother. Now, why would it say causes shame to his mother? Why would it say that? Very simple. Because if you're not giving the rod and reproof, meaningly the father is not there, it's going to be a shame to the mother. It's a shame to the mother because the father's not present. If the father was present and he was given the reproof, it wouldn't be a shame to the mother. And we see this all the time. You know, in America, unfortunately, the divorce rate is close to 60%. And unfortunately, a lot of women have to raise their children alone. It's a terrible thing. We know of many, many cases ourselves where this happens. And the women try their best. You know, they're trying to work and make money and take care of their children, do all these things, and it's horrible. It's a very, very hard life to do it that way. But in the end, it's still not going to change the fact that without a fatherly figure, there's going to be something missing there, something that's greatly missing. And you know, in the 23rd Psalm, one of the greatest Psalms in the Bible, Yahweh is my shepherd, I shall not want. In verse 4 of that Psalm, what does he say? Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Your rod and your staff. And you know, when you look at a rod, he's talking about a shepherd's staff. And how does a shepherd do with his staff? You know, it has the hook at the end. And when a sheep is going astray, what does he do? He gently pulls the sheep in with that staff. But the rod is a club. And that club is there for clubbing away animals. You know, maybe even hitting one of the sheep if he has to. And in order for that sheep to feel totally comforted and totally secure, he needs the rod and the staff. He needs both. And that's why I say the mother is more of the staff. The mother is more of the motherly love, giving that nurturing that a child needs, knowing that he always feels loved and secured. But the father is the one that gives the discipline, or should be. And the child needs that as much. I remember when I was a child, my parents weren't so much into you know, grounding and all that kind of stuff, go to your room. It was usually, you know, a belt buckle and that's the end of it. So, I mean, I feared to do something if my father was getting involved because I didn't want to get hit with a belt buckle. But there was times in my life when I remember my friends was, oh, no, I can't go out. I'm grounded. And sometimes I feel like, man, why don't I get grounded? You know, you feel like you're missing something, you know, because, again, it gives you structure and children need that. If you just let your children go off running wild and you're not giving them any structure in your life, you're not doing them any good. And as they get older, what's going to happen? That structure is just going to get wider and wider and wider if there's no structure. They're boundaries. You must give a child boundaries from the day they're born. They have to have boundaries. You have to teach your children. There's a time to sit in the playpen. There's a time to come out of the playpen. And I know with Mariah, it wasn't an easy thing. She didn't like the playpen. It probably took us 6 to 8 months until we got her to start liking the playpen. And again, we didn't want her to fear her into it. You know, and we tried giving her toys and this and that, and sometimes she'd throw them out, and then she'd have to learn to stay there without it. But she learned real quick that wasn't going to work. Because she'd rather be in there with the toy than not the toy. But if we were to let her get away with this and just say, well, now she can't stay in a playpen, she's not learning any structure in her life. And this is what we're saying, neural conditioning. If you can condition them from birth, it's so much easier. But even by the time a child is 5 years old, they've learned 80% of what they're going to learn in their life. Their character is already set by 5 years old. So you, as parents, you know, like I said, for us, most of us are not first generation. We started later. But for our children, we can start right away. We can start from birth. And we have to be teaching our children that kind of structure. You know, we want to nurture them. We want to give them security. We want to give them love. But we want them to know there's boundaries. There's got to be boundaries, you know. And there's a time to sit. There's a time to play. You know, there's a time to go outside, there's a time to go to bed. And I'm telling you, in the long run, this will give your children more security than anything else. Because when they're little, you might not think it because they don't like that. But as they get older, they will not be very secure if they don't have boundaries in their life. You know, think of us before we got the Torah. I love the Torah because it gives me boundaries. It teaches me right from wrong. It makes my life easy. Where the other end, without it, now I got to make these decisions. And a lot of times, we don't know right from wrong. So we want to make sure that we're giving them the rod and the staff. The rod and the staff. They need both. Proverbs 10 in verse 1. Proverbs 10 in verse 1. It says, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a father rejoice, but the foolish son is sorrow and depression to his mother. So again, we see with the absence of the father, a wise son makes a father rejoice, but a foolish son is sorrow and depression to his mother. Proverbs 22:15. Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. And again, we're living in a world today that psychologists will tell us, oh no, no, if you spank your child, you know, you're gonna give them low self-esteem. You know, or spanking will just bring violence. It'll teach them violence, and it's not true. The Bible is very clear that correction, and sometimes physical correction, not beating, it's train up a child, not beat up your child. I'm not talking about child abuse or beating, but spanking is something that's not only a good suggestion, it's biblical. You try to raise your children without spanking and see how far you're going to get. You know, and I've seen it. I've seen these, sorry to say, these little brats at 3 and 4 and 5 years old that are totally out of control. And what they're already doing at that age to their parents, the mouths they have, the things they do, the disrespect they have at 3 and 4 or 5 years old. And it's simply because the parents neglected to correct and spank the child when they were younger. You know, and that's not coming from me. That's coming from Yahweh. You know, he's telling us these simple things that spanking is a requirement if you want to bring your children under subjection. You know, the same way that he says in the book of Hebrews that Yahweh chastises every child that he loves. And we go through spankings. You know, what happens when we go through trials and sicknesses and different things? We're getting spankings from Abba above because he loves us. And sometimes we need those little spankings to bring us back in line the same way sometimes our children need it. And when they're small, it doesn't have to be hard. Just a little tap. Remember what I said, pain and pleasure. Everything we do is either to avoid pain or gain pleasure. So just the fact if a child is touching something they shouldn't touch and they're getting a little tap, a little tap, a little tap. Is it going to happen overnight? No. But if you do that over and over and over months, the child will learn it. This drawer I'm not allowed into, that drawer I'm allowed into. And that's the way they learn. See, the Bible says, train up a child. Train up a child. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the opening of the way, And when he is older, he will not depart from it. So again, what does that mean? As soon as the child's out of the birth canal, there's a training. It starts immediately. And every single thing, even when you don't think it, even when your child is an infant, he's listening to your voice. He's knowing the vocal changes in your voice. He's seeing your smiling or lack of it. You know, a child, from the minute they're born, all these things are being formed in him or her, you know, whatever it may be. And it's important that we understand that, that the training has to come from birth, right from the beginning. And it's consistency that will make it. You've got to be consistent with your children. Because if your child sees it, like I said, when I was a little child, I look at everything I did as a child to know not to do it. I knew that if I pestered my mother long enough, sooner or later she'd give in. So I knew when I had 7 no's, I knew I was only 3 more no's away to, go ahead, you know, get out of here. Can't be that way. It's got to be 1 no is enough. No is no. Because if your child taunts you and they see that no is not no, then you can't blame them when they keep asking you. We must be consistent with our children. The same way that Yahweh doesn't change. You know, Yahweh's word is his word. And it's never good to lie. It's never good to steal. It's never good to commit adultery. You know, it's just his word is his word. And we got to be the same way with our children. And I tell Mariah, you know, when she does something wrong, and I say, look, honey, because we're trying to teach her now about telling the truth. What do children know about lying? You know, and she might say something that's not true, and we're trying to teach her. Yahweh hates lying. Yahweh hates lying. The worst thing you can do is lie, because then mommy and Abba, we can't know whether we can trust you or not. So when I tell her, honey, if you don't listen, Abba's going to have to give you spanky, you know, and then she knows Abba doesn't lie. You know, even though she said, I'm sorry, Abba, but honey, I told you already. I gave you my word. I have to spank you because I love you. And then as soon as you spank, you hug them, you give them security, you tell them why, and we always make her say to us, what did you do wrong? Besides just saying, I'm sorry, because little children are pretty quick to learn, you know, that I'm sorry can get you away with something. So we make her admit to us, what did you do wrong? What are you sorry for? And she has to admit what she did. So it's going in her mind that it's being reconditioned day in and day out. You know, I'm sorry for disobeying mommy and Abba. I'm sorry for not listening to mommy and Abba. And then she's going to learn right from wrong. It's being conditioned, conditioned, conditioned. And that's why it's training. It's something that isn't going to happen in a day. It's going to be years. But I say, if you do it when they're young, by the time that child is 5 years old, you got 90% of the battle won. You got 90% of it won. If not, like I said, even in Israel, I've had friends of mine that have 4 and 5 children. I dread even visiting the house. You know, it's like kids climbing on the walls, you know, jumping on top, scratching you, pouring things on you. You feel like you've been in a combat zone just from being there 2 hours. Just from being totally undisciplined, you know. So it's important. We want to make sure we're not only disciplined, but we want to make sure that we're consistent. I always say your house should not be childproof, but your child should be houseproof. Your child has to learn there's certain drawers you don't go into. You have to make sure that your house is not childproof or your child is houseproof. And again, it takes discipline and training and time. Don't feel bad, you know, if you're a new parent and it's not happening overnight. It won't happen overnight. It'll take time and time again. I remember with Mariah, getting her not to touch the TV flicker. And you're wondering, wow, we told her this about 500 times. She knows, you know, what's going to happen if she touches it or the computer, you know. But yet, as time went on, it was less and less, and now almost none, every now and then, you know. But if it wasn't for the training, it would still be every single day. Ephesians 6:1-4. It says, children, obey your parents in Yahweh, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but nurture them in the discipline and teaching of Yahweh. So again, you never want to correct your child in anger. And like I say, whether someone is 2-year-old child or 92-year-old adult, I show the same respect for them. That child is a human being created by Yahweh, a child of His, and I have no right to belittle anyone, whether they're a child or an adult. None of us have any right to yell at, scream, belittle. You know, it's not the reason that Yahweh has made us caretakers. And the children you have, some, you know, we think of them as ours because they're our children, but really they're Yahweh's. We're just the caregiver. You know, He's giving us that opportunity to take that beautiful little child and help to create, you know, a son or daughter of Yahweh. So we're a caregiver. When the kingdom comes, you know, they're all children of Yahweh, not ours. So we're basically a caregiver, and we want to make sure that we're not provoking our children. You know, sometimes we want to, you know, maybe you get angry or mad, but you don't want to provoke your child. It takes patience to do it, and again, you should never correct the child in anger. You want to break the child's will, but not its spirit. And again, if you could break your child's will when they're young, you have done the greatest blessing you could ever do for your child. Because that's the problem with us. Yahweh is out with Satan, and it's a matter of our will. And when we're disobeying Yahweh, we're giving our will over to Satan. And Yahweh wants to break our will. You know, just like Yeshua said in Matthew 26:39, not my will be done, but your will be done. So we want to break the child's will, but we never want to break its spirit. You never want to break the child's spirit. You don't want to get to where your child is browbeaten, unresponsive, losing its lack of, you know, ingenuity and creativeness because they're so browbeaten by an over-aggressive father. You know, so again, we want our children to learn the Torah. We want them to learn discipline, but you never want to break the spirit of your child. And if you don't break the will of your children early, they will grow up with pride and self-centeredness and rebellion against authority. And again, even a couple of years ago, somebody in the congregation gave me these child-rearing tapes that were absolutely awful, that were saying the total opposite of what I'm saying today. You should never correct your children. You know, you'll make them have low self-esteem. You just have to let them do whatever they want to do. And in the long run, they'll make the right decision, you know, by your example. I'm thinking, wow, you know, burn these tapes. This is absolutely awful. You know, most of modern psychology that we're hearing today. How we train our children is how they will be like. It's that simple. It's a training process, and how we train them is what they'll be like. And again, the main point is consistency. We must show the penalty for the action each time. And I know it's harder the older you are, you know. I didn't think I'd be 46 years old with a 3-year-old. And sometimes you're tired, it's the end of the day, and you don't have the energy, but you still have to be consistent for their sake. You know, because if I'm not, then I'm messing up that little girl's mind because I'm not showing her the consistency that I should be. Where'd that come from?
Oh,
alrighty. Let's go to Proverbs 13. Proverbs 13 in verse 24 says, "He who holds back his rod hates his son, but he who loves him seeks him with correction. He who holds back his rod hates his son, but he who loves him seeks him with correction." So again, like we said, you know, discipline, training, even when you have to spank, it's a training, it's not a beating. There should never be marks on a child, hitting the child refusely or anything like that. It's all just a simple training and a tiny little spanking. Ecclesiastes 8 in verse 11. Says, when sentence on an evil work is not executed speedily, on account of this, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. And we see this in the world. You know, very important scripture. When sentence on an evil work is not executed speedily, on account of this, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. If people are doing something and they're not corrected, they'll do it more. So again, when you do have to correct your child, you want to do it as quickly as possible. You want them to understand why they're being corrected. And you always want to explain to them, you know, what they did wrong. And then, of course, the most important thing is after the correction, you always want to show them the love. You want them to know that your correction is because you love them, that it's not meaning a lack of love, or you love them any less because they did something wrong. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Proverbs 19 and verse 18, it says, "Chasing your son, for there is hope, and do not set your soul on making him die." Chasten your son, for there is hope, and do not set your soul on making him die. And literally, without correction, it's like we're setting a death sentence to our children. Because again, what are they going to... They're going to grow up in society without any type of boundaries. They're going to grow up being selfish. They're going to be self-motivated. They're going to just want to do their own way. And they won't know that there's any consequences to their actions. So again, chasing your son, for there is hope, and do not set your soul on making him die. Proverbs 4. Proverbs 4, starting in verse 1. Said, "Sons, hear the instruction of a father and pay attention to no understanding. For I give you good teaching, do not forsake my Torah. For I was my father's son, tender and an only one in the sight of my mother. And he taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart cling to my words, keep my commandments and live.'" So here we see proper child rearing and proper structure in the family brings stability to a child and it brings them up in the commandments. And just another note on that, you know, it just goes without saying that parents should never argue or disagree in front of a child. Children have the tendency of trying to pin parents against each other. You know, the child will come and first they'll ask the mother something and she'll say no, and then they'll go to the father without the father knowing that the mother was asked. You know, so parents want to make sure there's a consistency there, that the children do not play one off against each other, and that there's always a... The mother is always supporting the father is always supporting the mother, and they see that the authority level in the house is united. You know, if children do not see that, you're going to have problems. You know, it's going to divide the household. And the other thing that's most important is, if the children do not see love in the house, anything you're teaching them will be useless. Because by the time they get to the age of accountability, they're going to say, "Hey, you know, you're teaching me this stuff for the last 20 years, but look at you and mom. You know, I don't see love with you. I don't see this." And they'll just look at you as hypocrites. And I think probably more second generation children fall away because of that than any other reason. So again, the things in our life are inadequacies, the things we lack. You know, before we have children, we can almost put up with some of these things. But once you have children, it's crunch time. We have to get rid of these things in our life because we know that it's going to affect another little life and not just ourselves. So important that our children see that. They see that the parents are united. They see that you're not just saying words on Shabbat. We're not just hypocrites, but we're living this way. You know, that we live this way all the time. We're trying to live holy and acceptable lives to Yahweh. And that we're not training them incorrectly. Remember again that children repeat almost everything that they hear, especially when they're younger. And I highly encourage anyone with small children to seriously consider homeschooling. With the school system today and the way that these teachers are trained and the things they're teaching children, you have such a high percentage of losing your child if you send them to public schools. You know, nothing is impossible without Yahweh, but I mean, when you think about it, it's like rolling the dice, playing Russian roulette. You know, that I would say you have way more than 50-50 chance if they're going to be in a school where there's no other believers. And what they're being conditioned to every day is peer pressure from people that are not believers. And at 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, it's just too much for a little one to take. And I've even seen it in Israel. I've seen families that came here, that homeschooled their children in the States and came here and put them in public schools, and the children got lost. You know, so it's important that we understand from Scripture the responsibility to raise your children is to the mother and the father. It's not to the state or the government. And we have a responsibility before Yahweh to raise those children that He's putting in our care. And we want to do the best as possible. And I would, like I said, I'd highly encourage homeschooling to just about anybody. And again, the society will make you think you're not good enough or you're not smart enough. But all I know is, in the end, when that child is 18 or 20 years old, either they believe in Yeshua and Yahweh and they're on the right path or they're not. And that's the only thing that matters. You know, so there's all kinds of workbooks for homeschooling and manuals and even people working together, networks. A friend of ours is actually starting one of the first homeschooling networks right here in Israel. So never think you don't have the capabilities, because Yahweh wouldn't have given you the child if you didn't have the capabilities to take care of them. The last thing that I want to mention also, in the world we live in, you know, with movies and television and all these things, that it's important that we really consider what teaching materials we're using for our children. You know, in the Bible, you really don't see children learning fantasy, you know, and all these things of VeggieTales and King David being a carrot, you know, and all these other superheroes, you know, Spider-Man and all this nonsense. I don't see any of it as scriptural. You know, I see Samuel as a little boy, 4 years old, already serving Yahweh in the temple. You know, when we go to Africa, it's amazing. These children that are anywhere from 3, 4, 5 up until 9 and 10, they will sit there on that floor for 5 and 6 hours and not peep a word. It's just amazing how well-disciplined they are. And I was asking the elders there one time, you know, how do you train your children like this? And he said, it's just life. You know, from the time they're starting to walk, they're carrying wood and they're working. And there's no time for fantasy in third world countries where you make less than $5 a week. You know, they're getting buckets of water and you know, they're learning a work ethic. So again, you know, living in the West, in the facade of Babylon, you know, a lot of times we may think these things are harmless. But, you know, I just, in the Bible, I don't see fantasy as Yahweh's way. You know, I don't see it. Something is either right or wrong. It's either true or false. And I don't see that method of teaching, you know, from Scripture. Harry Potter, things like that. So many Christians. Even, like I said, just going back a couple of weeks ago to my mom's funeral, I was thinking, because it's the end of October, I said, wow, people are starting to decorate for Christmas this early. I said, oh no, that's Halloween. Everybody's house was filled with Halloween decorations and lights and all this other kind of baloney. And all of the people that were Christians were doing this. I'm thinking, why on earth would a Christian? I could understand Christmas. They don't understand it. They think it's, you know, Yeshua's birthday. But what Christian would want to celebrate Halloween with ghosts and goblins and ghouls and dressing up your child like a demon and sending him to the neighbors begging for candy and money? I mean, it just is so illogical. It makes no sense. So we don't want to take the way of the world with witchcraft, Harry Potter, and some of these other things, but we want to be teaching them the word instead. You know, from the time they're old enough that they can start to understand the Bible stories, there's all kinds of great things you can get in teaching them Bible stories and that kind of thing. The last scripture is Proverbs 23:24. Proverbs 23:24, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he who fathers a wise one shall even be glad in him. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he who fathers a wise one shall be even glad in him. So again, this is the end result of the Elijah message, turning the hearts of the fathers back to the children, and the hearts of the children back to the fathers. And there's no shortcut, there's no easy road. It means that as fathers and as men, you know, we need to take the Elohim-given responsibility we have of caring for our family, of loving our wives and our children, spending time with them, giving them security and a good role model in how we are, teaching them the word and being there for them. And like I said, the kingdom is so close, you know, that for many of us that have small children, our children could be the very first human beings going into the kingdom. So there's never been a greater responsibility than now to train our children for their great potential. And I always say when I see teenagers that are moping around and, oh, I'm bored and all this, it cuts to my heart. Because, wow, when you think of what the potential of these young ones are, to be the first leaders, you know, the first mayors of cities in the world tomorrow, in the kingdom that's coming, to be the first humans that will be in that kingdom and starting the first generation of regeneration under Yeshua, they have the greatest potential ever. And we want to make sure that we instill this in our children. And who knows, if our master delays, maybe they will have children. We never know. But we want to let them know that there is hope in this life. There's not hope in this world, but there's hope in this life, that there's a greater world coming, and instill in them Yahweh's kingdom, and help them to want to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. You know, our daughter already, just from seeing the terrible earthquake in Haiti and some of these things in Africa and the floods that were in Philippines, she constantly tells me, Abba, when I get a little older, I want to come to you. I want to help the poor people. I want to help the poor children. So it's like we're instilling in her, you know, to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So I hope that this helped some. I'm going to turn this off.